Hello, and welcome to another episode of SLA, Second Language Acquisition for Everyone. I'm Bill Langley-Bosnick, he, him.
Ben Fisher-Rodriguez, he, him.
And Ben, this week, we're going to be on gatekeeping quite the article. Really,
large
I just
scale.
Thought it was large scale. And when we say large scale, we mean large. 8,522 participants. But what were they doing? They were taking a look at comprehension-based methods and proficiency gains. So this article that we're looking at is evaluating the effectiveness of a comprehension-based language teaching, a large-scale pre-test, post-test study by Kurum. And it was just released last year. I think I found this article because our good friend of the pod, Dr. Diane Neubauer, had shared this article somewhere on social media. But yeah, let's jump into some gaslighting. So like, what have we thought about expectations? Like what do people expect from like a comprehension-based language teaching program?
I think that from the outside, because people have experience with like one or the other method or set of training or a something, they equate like comprehension-based teaching must be TPRS. Comprehension-based teaching must be OWL. Comprehension-based teaching must be AIM. Or if they do a textbook or a text that is leaned more in the direction of it's not just traditional grammar and vocabulary, that is their experience of it. And if it doesn't get them what they want, which may be grammatical accuracy, immediate accurate output, or whatever the kind of internal goals that language teachers carry into this and we see as our like final goals, that the students should be speaking all the time and that it should be native-like, blah, blah, blah. If they don't get that, then they go, okay, comprehension-based teaching doesn't work. And it's just kind of like a silly little clown show compared to like the serious, rigorous desk work-y, left brain sort of grammar and vocabulary instruction.
Yeah. And I think, like, do you think that perspective goes over to students too?
I think as well. We've talked in previous episodes, yeah. And I definitely talk with my PLC a lot about how a comprehension-based classroom, because of the high amount of input that students are getting into what is happening, and I mean input, not like comprehensible input, but that like the co-created nature of a lot of the content,
yeah.
Or that's one option, right? Or the amount of like choral responses, individual responses, teachers personalize things. And we talk in depth about student lives and, you know.
And sometimes it seems like the teacher is doing all of the talking.
Right. And that, yeah. And that, you know, and I'm a wacky right. person too. And that like, I accept zany ideas because that's what I gravitate towards as well. And so on the student side of things, they have all their academic classes and then they have whatever German is, right? Like, which is something right. different and they don't need to worry about it or none of that, which is a good thing in the sense that I would like them to not be anxious to be in my class. The right. flip side of that is that behaviors can become hard to manage if students think that perception lends to that the class doesn't matter in quotation marks in the same way that other school stuff matters. And so that is just a constant, you know, managing of expectations and kind of, for me, explaining why I'm doing the things that I'm doing in class and that it's like born out of goodwill towards them, but also research.
And like, I think that's quite a big gap that we have to like try to bridge because, yeah, exactly that. Like, it doesn't look and maybe doesn't feel a lot of the time like school. Like, I found that recently, like, when I do more school-like things, there's definitely more attention. However, like, those school-like things, for me anyway, are, like, input processing or information processing activities. So, like, and even then, the nature of language that output can vary so much from student to student, and it looks like we're not objectively grading because we're like, oh, well, but they wrote this. Yeah, well, but they had, I don't know, prepositions and they had whatever, and they combined two sentences. They had a sentence connector. Like, so even if the rest of it doesn't look great, or even if it's just like, it can still be like a 100 on a scale of 100. Like, but there can be two different answers that look completely different. And we still have to think about like, is the student showing any growth? Is the student using like recently learned vocabulary? Are they trying to incorporate like the structures that we've been trying to hit? Yeah, me, one of my colleagues and I talk quite a bit about how like the nonstop processing of what students are doing and figuring out our next move with language is so exhausting. Like, 'cause we're, you can't expect what someone's going to say in a conversation. So when a student says something and you have to not only think about if what they said was like content correct and that they understood the content, but then we're also thinking about what vocabulary did they use? What kind of, were they answering in just single words? Were they answering in multiple words, or were they even getting to sentences? Like, how are they responding on the spot? Can I push them to go further? Because I think they gave me a weak answer for them. Like a million and one thoughts, nonstop. All of the things. Yeah, we're just thinking about all of these things at once. And it is all because we have to make sure that they understand.
Right. And you're thinking holistically, like,
And
this is a
yeah.
conversation and I want the conversation to keep going. And so you, with your like analytical knowledge of language and language acquisition and your goals and what you've been doing in the unit, is all that background information that makes teachers exhausted, right? A thousand things in our head. But you're thinking about it in a holistic way. And I could see that being a deterrent for teachers wanting to go towards comprehension-based teaching, because when you're doing something like, grammar acquisition and vocabulary, there is a right and a wrong answer every time. It is a yes, no, right? Like, I'm not, you're not thinking of all those things that you used to describe that you're having in a conversation with somebody, which again is in true fulfillment of the interpersonal standard, because interpersonal communication, you don't know what your interlocutor is going to say and you're exchanging unknown information. That's more like in fulfillment of the standard, but it is not the same as there being a yes, no answer and us just having to be the evaluators of whether or not something is correct, which is
Like
more
layers
close
upon
and simple.
layers, yeah.
Yeah.
Layers upon layers of language development that we have to pay attention to.
And it's something that, something they draw out in the article too, is that like there are many schools that think that they have turned towards a communicative language teaching because they have the students producing language. They're like, well, we're not doing grammar translation anymore because it's not just reading and writing. The kids are moving their mouths, ergo, it is communicative. But handing students a list of questions that is just supposed to elicit specific verb forms or specific vocabulary or, random answers is not really communication. I have seen too often like just lists of questions. It's like, oh, I need a list of questions to practice. And then the partners read them aloud to each other, and then the other partner does nothing with that information. It doesn't really matter if they were listening. Sometimes, students who are interested in grammar will be able to correct or evaluate their partner for grammatical accuracy. But most of the time, they're just trying to get through it. And if they're not really listening to each other, we can't really say that's communicative. They are just talking their grammar translation, essentially.
That also kind of reminds me of the joke, like, oh, I took 4 years of French and I learned every dialogue, and when I got to France, they didn't know what they were supposed to say.
Exactly. But I think too, it like something that I kind of came with, like when thinking about this article and communicative language teaching generally too, is just the like kind of total mismatch in expectations across the various stakeholders in this sort of conversation, where you have universities who say they want one thing, and often, students in language courses at universities are being funneled towards literary or cultural analysis, maybe linguistics. And so they need to be able to speak literary language, right? They need to be able to talk the language of university of literary analysis. But then you have something like the AP exam, which is pitched towards college and college credit, but speaks to something slightly different than that it is just like a slightly different set. And it does holistically address different language modes and skills, but it's not quite the same. And I also, frankly, I think the AP exam is pitched too high for 4 years. I think students need longer than that to get to that level. That's based on my taking the
Because,
training twice.
yeah, because what is it? Like a five is equates to what, an intermediate high,
It's like
advanced low?
intermediate, high, advanced, low sort of range. Yeah.
Yeah, which is
How I got
like,
certified in Spanish and German here in the state of Washington.
yeah.
Right. So there's that mismatch of expectation, so that they're like pitching it in a proficiency way, but that's different than literary analysis and what any individual literature professor at a college might want or need. And then you also have programs like IB, which is structured, their language acquisition program is structured in a different way and longer term. And then you have your like average American high school that purchased a textbook 15 years ago that is already outdated in its content and also speaks to a kind of a different paradigm. And so there's no national expectation of what language proficiency looks like. And I think that's just because there is not a bit like a national expectation of multi-literacy, multi-proficiency in different languages, which is bizarre a world because again we're also like a nation of immigrants, and our like country prides itself on being this like melting pot. I mean, depends on where you are. Melting pots and salad bowls of people being there, and bringing their linguistic treasure troves of experience and life. And so
Their
they're just we
linguistic and cultural repertoires, if you will.
Yes, period. But like again, the moral of the story being is that
Yeah.
the way that people talk to us who are not in language teaching, the conversations I hear between language educators, the conversations I hear between elementary and secondary educators, the conversations I hear between secondary and tertiary educators, we're all living in different planets a lot of times. Ironically, we are speaking different languages. But the result of that is that
Ayo.
we don't have common measures that everyone kind of agrees on. And so there's just like a misalignment of goals and then a misalignment of outcomes. And then the comprehension-based people are complaining about the university folks or the middle school teachers that came before them or their colleagues and then the university professors are complaining about the kids who got comprehension-based teaching or not good enough grammar teaching or wondering why the kids don't speak. You know what I mean? Like everyone's mad all the time.
Yeah.
That was just the one
So,
thing I thought about while reading this article.
yeah, just the one thing. Yeah, so I think that pretty much nails it. And I mean, there's much more I'm sure that we could have guess lit ourselves about going into this article, but I think it's all about communication of expectations and what's developmentally appropriate.
And because research is not a shutdown for us and not a conversation stopper, we are going to dive into this research and ungatekeep this article. I am here to tell you about evaluating the effectiveness of a comprehension-based language teaching, a large-scale pretest-potest study. This was published in Rumeli DE Journal of Language and Literature Studies in August of 2025 by Kurum.
For like me reviewing the text, I highlighted almost everything.
Perfect. It's super well written and it's like very.
I thought it was a very enjoyable read, like as far as research goes. Like
Period.
it was written very well, very teacher friendly, and this is open access, so make sure to go check it out yourself.
Cool. So the problem that posed in the article is about the entire country of Turkey. And the idea behind that being that the Turkish government has invested a lot of money in raising English language proficiency across the country because their similar neighbors around them had higher levels of English proficiency, but not Turkey. And so Turkey was, I'm trying to pronounce it right. I've learned that there is a pronunciation that's different from the one I learned as a child, so please forgive listeners. So the Turkish government is investing in trying to make changes to how English is taught in the country, so that they can get the return on investment and be internationally competitive and, make it worth all the instruction that they're putting in, because they were finding that they were giving lots of instruction and not necessarily getting strong proficiency outcomes. Previously in the country that I am trying to pronounce, Turkey, that there were strong programs of grammar translation, as there were across, across the world for a long time. And then what they titled a weak communicative language teaching, again, a disguise for grammar and vocabulary acquisition under the guise of like, oh, look, we're talking, so it's communication. There's also a strong culture of test preparation in anticipation of university studies that, we'll study up for the test and be exactly what the test looks like, and that's what English instruction is. The basically boiling it down to is that all the previous approaches were had heavy focuses on grammatical structures and vocabulary acquisition. The authors contrast this with C, what they put as CBLT, comprehension-based language teaching. We in the United States have an interest group in ACFL called Comprehension-Based Communicative Language Teaching, which we have shortened to CCLT. So same idea, CBLT, CCLT, comprehension-based approaches to language acquisition, which they characterize as friendly and low anxiety, which makes me think that the previous programs in Turkey were not friendly and anxiety producing. And so they found an opportunity. They're trying to get more out of their English instruction in Turkey. And so they were going to try out a program of comprehension-based language teaching in military schools because the environment was much more homogeneous in terms of the student population, motivated, rigorous instruction, predictable schedules. And that makes it more controlled, which makes it more effective for a study like this.
Yeah, and can I, like, something that we want to make sure that we're thinking about, like, when we're reading studies, we need to make sure to, like, think about, like, how similar are our students to the students here? And this is a military school, or these are military schools. So, listeners, keep that in mind. There's probably maybe less classroom management issues because it's so structured, and I think it even mentions that like they were more structured.
But imagine too, I mean, that means almost that they're getting a stronger indication of the effectiveness of the intervention. Would consider not using the intervention and keeping the old ways instead, with the same classroom management problems that you're going to have either way. So, something to keep in mind. So, as part of their literature review, they kind of look over comprehension-based teaching in general, find, some findings that there were no differences in pronunciation between groups of students who had received extensive speaking practice and error correction and from training from the teacher that was really focused on oral production and correctness of oral production. But then there were other students put into a program of just comprehension-based listening and reading and ended up with almost the same pronunciation skills. This is a study I'd be interested in looking more into that was talking about the challenge posed by Asher of TPR fame. Incidentally, I'm reading Asher's book right now, and it has kind of been a blast from the past, but also very interesting to see his perspectives on language acquisition at that time, which was, the 70s, 80s, 90s. Anyhoozle, but Asher's thing was that we don't push student output very hard, and that maybe students will only start speaking after 90 hours of comprehension. That, for most U.S. American high schools, is probably half of your level one course. If you can imagine providing half of a level one course just with listening and reading inputs, what a different course that would be in the first place. But that was kind of the like, oh, should we only do that? Well, sure, would be interesting to try. They also cite the need for students to develop a reading habit, leaning on the work of Cho, Krashen, and Lichtman. So that basically comprehension-based teaching has worked, has produced students who are able to speak similarly intelligibly as students who are in like a very output-heavy model, but that. And that also that the development of a reading habit is what helps to develop more advanced proficiency. More specifically, in Turkey, to kind of reference what was going on in the country, they have analyzed the materials that are available in the schools, which again was a more grammar translation or weak CLT sort of bent, and found that they don't reflect real-world usage. The frequency of real-world collocations and structures was all out of whack. And so they're not matching their goals with their grammar practice, which is a lot what they were getting a lot of. They were getting a lot of grammar practice, but it wasn't matching with how they would want the students to use the language out in the real world, just based on the materials. So think about those textbooks you got lying around in your department, in that storage room, wherever. You might feel that. I know I certainly do. And they cited some experiments that show strong writing and speaking skills in students who receive kind of comprehension-based teaching without specific training in speaking and writing in the context of Türkiye, which again, everything is contextual, like Bill said earlier, but they're already seeing that in their country that CCLT can have strong effects, strong positive effects for skills in reading and writing, listening and speaking, without explicit instruction in those skills and without pushing in those skills.
In another study, though teachers in international schools in Turkey, believe their course books follow communicative language teaching, CLT principles, it was revealed that the materials attenuate experiential subcomponents of communicative competence, pointing instead to a grammar learning practice. So,
Right.
like,
So sometimes we think like, oh, look, it's communicative. Yay. And
yeah,
it's not.
but just because there are some communicative goals doesn't mean that the materials are prepared in a way that leads students to that.
I've seen textbook reissues that slap on ACFL standards onto activities that were in previous editions, or add a little explainer at the beginning about how this leads to the standards. Even when that not is not necessarily true. I'm looking online, apparently it's Türkiye with an emphasis on the first one. Great. Good to know. We all learned a thing today. So let's get into the methods. Yeah, thanks, Bill, for that. Yeah, the materials say they're one thing when they're actually something else. Something for our listeners to keep an eye out for. So here is the method. They had roughly 8,300-ish students spread across seven schools. These were four high schools, 9 through 12 grades, and three academies, which are like a military academy, so like the Air Force Academy, the Turkish Army Academy, or whatever, which offer 4-year degree programs. These are predominantly male because military schools are often predominantly male. The militaries are often predominantly male. And their intervention was to provide training and a change in curriculum towards these schools, towards comprehension-based language teaching. The principles of which they outlined as heavy emphasis on input, heavy emphasis on comprehensible input in the language, delayed output of the language, so not pushing students to output before they were ready, minimal explicit grammar instruction, so maybe pop-ups like we've talked about before, or just a little bits of input processing. It's not clear what exactly they did for minimal explicit grammar, but they said it was not a focus. And finally, an emphasis on using multimedia. So you got to imagine pictures and videos, as well as scaffolded readings. So maybe something in the vein of an embedded reading, or maybe something, with glossing or imagery, or heavy support to make it comprehensible. The assessment that students took at the end of this to see, to pre and post their language proficiency was the Oxford Placement Test, which is an adaptive exam that they use to measure listening, grammar, and vocab per the article, which is very interesting to me that, two of those things are not exactly language skills, grammar and vocab. Those are, whatever. Anyways, but that listening comprehension was part of that as well. And then it adapts to how a student responds to the questions and gets harder or stays at the same level. And then they get a point score, with 100 to 120 points being C2 level on the CEFR scale, which is roughly superior to distinguished on our ACFL scale. So a highly educated, competent speaker of the language who's able to deal with multiple different linguistic situations. Obviously, the students are not in this area. That's not where most students are. Our students in the United States are going to be in the A1 to B1/B2 range. Just for reference, if you need to learn about the CEFR scales, just type in CEFR ACFL comparisons and you can kind of see what the crossover is there. I Google that document all the time. The results of this intervention were this. On average, across all seven of these schools, there was about a 10-point increase in the proficiency scores that students received. Now, 10 points is roughly half of one of the CEFR levels. So between A1, A2, there are about 20-point blocks on this specific exam. But this caused the average proficiency across all the schools to raise from A2, which is roughly ACTFL intermediate mid, to average B1, which is intermediate high slash advanced low. 57% of the students in this study went up a level. So they went from A1 to A2, they went from A2 to A, no, I almost said A3, that's not a thing. From A2 to B1 or from B1 to B2, etc. And so most, over half of the students are going up a proficiency level because of this. Students who are at the A1 level, who are your students that are like novice high, intermediate low students, had the most gains. And those students were making the jump to A2, which is more like intermediate mid, or even to B1. So the lower the level of student, the more pronounced the proficiency gains were using this new program of comprehension-based teaching.
Which makes complete
Another
sense based on what we know of, like,
Yes.
we've seen the inverted pyramid
Yes.
from Act Full. So, like, that makes perfect sense. Like, you've got less distance to go, so you're going to see more gains. Yeah.
This is something that Bill will rage about momentarily, is that the schools where teachers received more training in comprehension-based method teaching methods had more gains. They could have up to 31% more gains for their students if the teachers were well trained in comprehension-based methods.
Yeah, my note on that was an expletive because I was blown away.
Holy poop.
Yeah, it's wild. That is a wild effect. So yeah, 23% greater gains for CBLT trained teachers. And but even further in the Air Force High School, where all the teachers had at least 3 years of experience teaching with comprehension-based language teaching and extensive training, the student gains were 31% higher. That's wild.
It's wild.
That is wild.
I think
And
of that. I always think of that, like some of these, like the Hattie meta studies talk about the years of schooling that students gain with highly effective teachers and methods. And you got to think, like 31% more. Like, could you have a you an additional what, like 2, 3 months of teaching, like.
I can improve, like, this tells me, like, I can continue improving my practice as I'm continuing to get trained and
Absolutely.
continue refining things. Like, how, what proficiency can your students reach? The limit does not exist.
Something that really drove this home for me too is the comparison that they did between these military schools that received this intervention and then state universities that had this data as well as private schools, which also had this data, the year over year pre and post testing of students' language proficiency. Historically, the military academies would gain about 6.6 points per year in their students' proficiency. This obviously blew up to 10.4 on average as a result of this intervention. So, and that's like a 50% increase in performance just by implementing this intervention. But the state universities and the private schools were only seeing an average yearly gain of about 1.4 points on these tests. And their students were getting sometimes hundreds of more hours of language instruction.
So, the big deal about this being a large scale study of 8,500-ish participants is that you don't get 10-point average increases from a small sample and, like, think that it's generalizable. Like, this is a massive. Like, it's not like it's just chance. It's not like just one school had better students, quote unquote, than another school.
They flew in a bunch of master CCLT teachers into the school, and then they had a miracle of language proficiency growth. No, it wasn't that.
Like, it's not like this just happened by chance.
Right. In the sample size, so yeah, roughly 8,300-ish students in these military schools. The sample size for the state and universities and private schools under traditional methods was roughly 1,100 students. So still a substantial, not as big as the military school sample size, but even then that almost makes it more kind of remarkable, right? So the moral of the story being is that this is in a more efficient way for students to acquire language. And again, the Turkish government is over here being like, how can we've spent all this money on English proficiency and it's never panning out. This seems to be panning out for them. The discussion at the end, they kind of throw in a challenge to De Keyser skill building because These students were fed a diet of comprehensible input and their skills grew incredibly. I'm go back to the Oxford placement test that they use being focused on listening, which I could see a heavy advantage for students who are hearing lots of comprehensible input in the language, but then also grammar and vocabulary. These students acquired a lot of their grammar and vocabulary by listening and reading. So it challenges the de Keyser skill building model, according to the authors. They list a need for comprehensive PD, so lots and lots of PD. They even went as far to say is that training in comprehension-based language teaching principles and practices should be a requirement for teacher certification, which I was like, round of applause.
Well, I do know that, like, in Indiana anyway, for the licensing exam, like, there's a whole mess of Crashin and comprehensible input stuff.
I think it shows up in the certification exams for sure. I remember the language acquisition stuff coming up on my exam, but it's like how it's applied and what your mentor teachers and teachers across the schools that you work at end up doing is variable, really. They also talked about the need to get new materials, ones that are relevant, that build towards these communicative language skills rather than just grammar and vocabulary acquisition and practice. And maybe also changing these standardized exams so that they are more accurately assessing these proficiencies. But overall, everyone could benefit from learning more about how to create a cycle of input that gradually leads to output later than we think. And so leaning on comprehension-based teaching and not forcing output as much.
Can I read a final quote from the conclusion that I really like?
Hit it.
The quote, "Optimal implementation context noted at Air Force High School consisting of both high quality CBLT practice in a supportive school context shows that when the language model is allowed to function as it was designed and with sufficient professional development for teachers, CBLT can indeed be highly effective." And like, I would even say like highly effective would be the wrong choice of words here, but because like the results are outstanding.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So great job, Ben.
Woo!
Again, I mean, like, of course I have a million more thoughts on this, but we try to keep it under an hour. So how about we move into some girl bossing? With girl boss this time around, I think because we kind of all always center on leading with input, I think maybe could we girl boss a little bit about like where to find some training?
Absolutely. I encourage people to find some sort of local comprehension-based teaching PLC. I've got one in the Seattle area if a listener is interested.
Got one in the central Indiana area if anyone is interested.
Yeah, and to find a group of people to experiment, to problem solve, to get better at this together, because the conferences can be expensive. Traveling to conferences across the country, across the world can be expensive, and we know that everyone's funding for PD situation is so variable. You know, some schools will pay for any and everything, and then some schools will give you like a pizza gift certificate and call it a day. And so we know it's very variable, so there are options available online. Obviously, there are local groups that you can try to find. You can try to put your feelers out to that.
Is it Mike Pito? Mike Pito has a list of the local PLCs, or someone did. There's one out there.
I wonder how current that is, but I would love to see that, and I'll try to find that to put into the show notes as well. Yeah. At the very minimum, I would recommend finding a CI group for your language. So, you know, CI is kind of another moniker for this, for CCLT. So you might end up in the IFLT. NTPRS, what's the other acronym in there?
IFLT, NTPRS, CI Teaching.
Great. Group on Facebook is huge and has a lot of resources related to that. A great place to connect with people about comprehension-based language teaching. There are CI groups for Spanish teachers, for German teachers, for French teachers, for Chinese teachers, Japanese teachers, Arabic teachers, etc. across Facebook as well. If you're not on Facebook, a little bit harder to find, but not impossible. We wanted to shout out, too, because we did one of our early episodes was with Marta Jednek about comprehension-based teaching conferences and the impact of going to conferences and getting coaching and making connections with other teachers. We wanted to shout out some conferences that we know are coming up that center comprehension-based language teaching, where you can get intensive training, build your networks of people that you can rely on for reflection and skill building, and also have a good time. I've gone to one of these and
gosh, they're so much fun.
Which ones have you been to, Bill?
I did IFLT back in the day. Then I did Fluency Matters when IFLT became Fluency Matters. And I've done the CI Summit from VOSIS. And during the COVID year, they did the Ajin workshop online. So I did that. And that was wonderful.
Look at you.
I want to go there.
You, Mr. Globetrotter over here, though. Dang. Back in the day, there used to be one called Comprehensible Cascadia that took place in Portland, Oregon. That was majorly slay. I took Korean with Janet Kyung. Shout out to Janet Sungsae Nim. And just absolutely blew my mind. And that was kind of what got me to think about this all the time. So here we are. Let's shout out some ones that are for sure still in existence and even coming up soon, actually. So April 17th to 18th, Mitten CI, that's in the Mitten of Michigan in Saline, just outside Detroit, is a two-day comprehension-based teaching conference. Similarly, in Iowa, there's Comprehensible Iowa in Des Moines, June 12th and 13th. The CI Summit is a three-day conference in Cincinnati, Ohio. That is July 15th through 17th. The Ajin workshop in Ajin, France, if you want to go abroad, is July 20th, my birthday, to the 25th. So if you want to go abroad for your excellent comprehension-based teaching training.
I've heard nothing but wonderful things about that conference. It's my dream.
And I would also love to go one day. Yeah. Maybe we can go together. That'd be fun. The CI Reboot is a completely online conference. Again, if it is harder for you to travel or you would like to do stuff from the convenience of your own home, I would say similarly, it has been very impactful for me. I've really enjoyed every time I've attended and presented. That is happening online. It starts on Saturday, June 20th, continues Thursday, June 25th, then the 26th and 27th through that Saturday, the following Saturday. And that's all online and you get access to the video content forever, or a while. I don't remember. Sorry, Karen. There are just so many options. If you look, I would say if you're listening to this and you're like, I don't have Facebook and I'm not trying to get on that. First of all, good for you. Second of all, reach out to us and we can try to get you connected with somebody. We're happy to do that because we know people. But the moral of the story is get connected with other teachers who are also trying to do this. Troubleshoot, make it work, share materials, share stories, share real world stuff that you have made comprehensified. Talk about techniques, talk about the specifics of your language, how you target those things for structured input. All those sorts of things are going to be variable by language and culture, but you should not have to do it alone, and you don't have to do it alone. So reach out to us through the podcast. We're happy to connect you. Or, you know, you put your feelers out. Put your feelers out there. Or start your own PLC. Yeah. Even better. So much fun.
Yeah, do it. And also, I know that if you're an ACTFL member, the CCLT SIG, and all of the SIGs as it is, have hours upon hours upon hours of webinars and trainings that you can get for free for being a member. And you just have to go sign up for those special interest groups on the ACTFL community, and you can get access to all of those recordings. It's just a wonderful resource to have.
Absolutely fabulous. Yeah, I sometimes I open the media section of the CCLT SIG and then I go, oh, because there's so much that are so about different topics that you might be wondering about. Fabulous. I would say too, just to end on a man yelling at cloud rant, is just that we have in the United States often so few hours with our students. You figure our school years are supposed to be roughly 180 hours. Obviously there's missing days and all sorts of, that's how long our contracts are. So it's not necessarily how long kids are there. And then you subtract out the days that get lost because there's an assembly or there's a fire drill in the middle of the period or it's a spirit week and everyone's being crazy, or it's a full moon and everyone's being crazy.
Or the water main breaks and freezes.
Or the power goes out for multiple days because of windstorms. So again, in summary, maybe say if you're lucky, you get 150 hours out of that. And then you somehow, by the grace of God, get a kid to stick with a language program for 4 years. They're getting 600 hours of something, of some sort of language instruction. How can we use it most efficiently? This study is pointing us towards focusing heavily on comprehensible input, heavily scaffolded and very delayed output, minimal grammar instruction, or doing it in a way that is compatible with the brain. Hello, structured input. I have to mention it once every episode, or Bill doesn't get his check.
Yeah, thanks.
Big structured input is listening. And then using students' real lives, using current events, using multimedia to help assist the teaching, keep it real world and grounded and effective.
Great. I have hit the wall.
I have yelled at the cloud sufficiently.
Yeah. So with that, make sure to get out there, keep things comprehensible, and slay. Bye.
Bye.